Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
NFL opening week, and to talk about the Giants, the Jets, the upcoming season, break it down, give us a preview, we bring in Ryan Dunleavy from the New York Post. Hey, Ryan, how are you?
What's up, Lori? How you doing?
I'm doing well. Let's start off with the Giants, and Vegas has them at 6.5 wins in terms of over-under. In terms of how you feel about the Giants, are you leaning towards the over or the under?
Well, you've had me on the show a couple times this offseason. I think people would know I'm leaning towards the under. I think it's a 5 or 6 win team. Mm-hmm. I know there's a theory out there that like everything went wrong for the Giants last year. And they still managed to win 6, so they're definitely going to win more than that. I mean, they also had some things go right, like an undrafted rookie playing out of his mind a couple games at quarterback to win some games. Some other opponents dogging it down the end of the stretch, and the Giants never dog it, which is a credit, I think, to the whole organization. So, yeah, I just think top to bottom talent-wise, I just don't think it's as good a team as last year. It's a younger team. It's a team with better positional priority. But I don't think it's as talented a team as last year, and last year's team struggled.
So that's an interesting comment in terms of a younger team, and that I would agree with you. I mean, the younger team is just a fact, but I would agree with you also that it seemed like a serious effort by the front office to realign the team in terms of spending and positional priorities. But this is... You know, in terms of Shane and Dable, normally we would look at a team like this and say, and what you're saying makes a lot of sense in terms of, you know, Giants fans can agree, disagree, but Vegas is saying 6.5. So let's even just say it's close to that and that this is, you know, hypothetically a 6-win team. Is that's usually rebuilding. And in terms of Shane and Dable, what do you think needs to happen this season for them to be, for this to be okay, to be at this portion of their rebuild?
Well, I think the most important thing I heard all offseason was when John Mara said that he doesn't treat them as a package deal, like that they'll be evaluated separately. Now, I don't know, you know, we're jumping 18 weeks down the line here, but I just don't think it really... It can be summed up. This is my 7th season around the Giants. I've been through, I don't know, 4 coaching searches. Like, I just don't think it's as simple as like, how many wins do they need to stay? Because mm-hmm. like, you could say a number like 6 or 7 or 8, but you forget how bad those other. If you win 7, you forget how bad the 10 weeks are of Giants and Cowboys fans. Cowboys and Eagles fans invading your stadium and back page headlines on the Post, and guys with quote-unquote injuries, and like you just forget, you know, Dable, like last year, yeah, they won 6, but the coaching staff was basically on fire behind the scenes. So like, if that happens again, how does he handle adversity? Does he have better check of his emotions? That'll be something that everybody's watching all season as soon as adversity strikes. Does the offense look better? Is the offensive line better? Is that the reason they're losing, or is that a step in the right direction after a decade? Does the $30 million a year pass rusher live up to his billing? And, you know, the reason they're struggling is the secondary. Okay, well, we don't have a lot invested in the secondary. So once we fix that, then we feel more promising. Like, if the high-paid players live up to their contracts, then I don't think it necessarily matters if it's 5, 6, 7 wins. If the right signs of progress are there, and we just have to patch these other holes, that's one thing. If Daniel's terrible and Burns doesn't play well and the offensive line's a disaster again, then it's really not going to matter how many wins you have, because the things that need to be fixed aren't fixed.
Yeah, I'd agree. When I was saying what would it be that needs to happen, you know, in terms of these guys, and I agree, with a young team in a rebuild, part of that is development of young players, that the first and second year players all make progress and you see them getting better. And that's a reason. And as you said, the offense, look, the offensive line looking competent, that would be progress for this team. In terms of let's say, the second-year players, so guys like John Michael Schmitz, DeAndre Banks, Jalen Hyatt, who do you have your eye on as somebody, if this team is going to evolve in a positive direction and maybe go slightly over a 6.5, you know, if we're talking under-over, who do you have your eye on of those second-year players?
Jalen Hyatt's who I have my eye on, who I think could actually meet some pretty high expectations. I think he is probably going to start ahead of Darius Slayton. Darius Slayton's a better player than him at this point. Sure. At this point, right now, but it's one of those we want to start our guys long-term situations. Darius is on the last year of his contract. Like, can he hold off Darius? Can he, with all the attention on Neighbors, and Wandale's going to catch a ton of 5-yard passes. That's just what they're going to do. It's going to be an extension of their running game. So, like, where does that leave Jalen Hyatt? He's going to be in a lot of single coverage, and he's super fast. Can he take advantage of that? And then from the opposite side of that, who I really have my eye on is John Michael Schmitz, because let's call this what it is. Josh Azudu and Evan Neal look like at a bust, I guess, is the nicest way I could say. Mm-hmm. They don't look like NFL starting caliber players. And that's a first round pick and a third round pick.
Yep.
So you really, really need your second round pick, your starting center, to be good. You can't go 0-for-3 on offensive linemen in the first, second, and third rounds in back to back drafts.
Talking to Ryan Dunleavy from the New York Post about the Giants and Jets. And all right, so those were the second-year players. In terms, obviously, Malik Neighbors, but also there's Tyler Newbin, Drew Phillips. Of the rookies, is Neighbors just a magnet for you? Or, when you look at all of these rookies, what kind of impact do you expect?
Yeah, I mean, Neighbors is the reason Giants fans should watch every game this season. Like, I don't even care if they're 0-3, whatever. Like, he's the reason to watch. He's awesome. Like, he's going to be a highlight every week. He's going to be fed the ball a ton. The one thing I can say about Brian Daboll's history of play calling is, even when he has a superstar player that defenses are going to hone in on, he's still creative enough to get that guy the ball. It's not like, okay, you took him away, we're going to do something else. No, Daboll finds a way to get Stephon Diggs the ball. He's going to find a way to get Malik Neighbors the ball. So he's in a class by himself. If he's healthy, he's going to put up, 1,100, 1,200 yards, 80 catches, something like that. Newbin is the guy that's really impressed me after a slow start to the training camp because he was injured. Everything you watched about, I can't say I watched a ton of Minnesota games, but I watched a ton of his draft highlights. And they were all interceptions and ball hawking. And then he ran a slow 40. And I was like, oh, I don't know. This dude's physical. I mean, this is a guy who wants to pop people. This is a guy who plays the run at the line of scrimmage. So I think he's a versatile safety. The Giants have had good luck, or actually, I shouldn't say that, good scouting of second-round safeties, whether it's Landon Collins or Xavier McKinney. And I wouldn't be surprised if Tyler Newbin's next in line.
And in terms of, you mentioned the secondary obviously being a weakness. Were you surprised that the Giants did end up reuniting with Adoree Jackson, who was their starting cornerback the last couple of years, was sitting out there in free agency and could have been signed at any point in the offseason, and now the Giants do it with days before the regular season starts?
So I wasn't surprised that they signed a cornerback. I've been pounding the drum for them to sign a quarterback pretty much since the draft ended, and they didn't get one. An outside cornerback. Drew Phillips, the slot corner. And I'm not surprised they did. I'm surprised they signed that one because this gets glossed over. He had two very good years here. 21 and 22 were very good years for Adoree Jackson.
Yep.
He did not have a good 23. People inside the organization who remain in the organization were not happy with his tackling last year. When you talk about not being happy with their tackling, people then start to say, oh, well, was it a full effort? I think Adoree Jackson's a good leader. I think he can still play. He's only 28 years old. Guys have bad seasons. Do I think he's the number one corner anymore? Probably not. but they don't want him to be a number one corner. They want Deonte Banks to be their number one corner. So I think, put it this way, he's better than what they had on the roster. So I think it's a credit to them that they realized that, but it would have been nice if they realized that earlier, and if he realized earlier, because it's not just a one-way street, if he realized earlier that he needed them as much as they needed him.
Do you, what kind of impact do you expect him to have even week one? I mean, is he starting week one in your opinion?
Probably not. It's hard to say. I mean, I haven't talked to him yet. I haven't seen him on the practice field. My guess would be he's active, but my guess would be if Cordell Flott's healthy and it looked like he is, that he'll get the first chance. That's who they really want to give the job to. That's who they're going a little bit out of their way to give the job to. So I would guess him, and if he can hold off Adoree, then he will, and if not, then Adoree will take over before the end of the month. But he shouldn't have a hard time getting up to speed. I mean, Shane Bowen's defense is influenced by Dean Pease, the former Titans defensive coordinator, who Adoree played under for a few years in Tennessee. What's interesting is when they cut him is the same offseason that Shane Bowen became defensive coordinator. So you don't know what Shane thought of Adoree, but I guess we'll find out.
And finally, Daniel Jones. What have you noticed from Daniel Jones that Giants fans maybe should be would give Giants fans some level of optimism as they approach this season, looking at it as a rebuilding year, skeptical after what they saw last season? What would be something that could make Giants fans more optimistic about Daniel Jones and this season?
I'll give you two things. One, the most aggressive Daniel ever was as a rookie under Pat Shurmur.
Yep.
And ever since then, he's been told to protect the ball at a high level because the interceptions were killing him. And it took away some of his aggressiveness. The aggressiveness is back. Daboll's pushing the ball down the field. That could lead to more turnovers. I say bring on the turnovers if it brings on the big plays. The offense has been so dreadful for so long that they need to modernize. And if getting to Daniel to 20-22 touchdowns means 13 interceptions, then so be it. So I do think there's a more aggressiveness to Daniel. And then this is harder to read, but it's what I hear from people I know who are close to Daniel. There was an obvious chip on his shoulder in 2022 when he played the best ball of his career after the Giants turned down his fifth-year option, and that led to his $40 million contract extension. That chip on his shoulder is back after the public pursuit of of drafting a quarterback to replace him. So if he can somehow turn that motivation from 22 and duplicate it, then he'll be a better player.
All right. So that's the Giants. Let's turn to the Jets. And Vegas has the Jets over under 9.5 wins. What are you taking, over or under?
Taking the over. I'm driving the Jets hype train at this point, Lori. I think it's a super, super talented team. I did pick them to win the AFC East in the post.
And, okay, so that would end the playoff drought, which Jets fans would be happy about. Which Jets players, beyond Aaron Rodgers, who's a player beyond, let's say, the obvious, Aaron Rodgers, Breece Hall? Beyond that, who's a player that you are, after seeing training camp, preseason, that on the offensive side you think can have a really outsized big impact on this season for the Jets?
Well, you said outside of Breece and Garrett, and that's like saying outside of the, second best running back in the NFL and like the seventh best receiver in the NFL. But if I took that away, I mean, it's probably Tyler Conklin, who was second on the team in receiving last year, and I think second on the team in receiving the year before. And Aaron Rodgers obviously has a long history of maximizing tight ends who, quite frankly, I don't think were as good as Tyler Conklin, Robert Tonyan, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a very good chance that Tyler Conklin is a red zone threat, is a third down threat, and he's going to get singles coverage. I mean, how do you cover Breece Hall in the box, Garrett Wilson on the outside, and then Mike Williams' speed? I haven't seen Mike Williams practice. He only did the last couple days. But if he's healthy and if he's, you know, got that speed, I mean, maybe it's him. Maybe it's not Tyler Conklin. Maybe it's Mike Williams. But I'd like to see him practice and be at full speed. Maybe it's Tyler Conklin early into the season and Mike Williams from November on.
Yeah, and Mike Williams, I mean, look, for all the injury prone, I think I remember looking this up when the Jets signed him, but that in his six seasons, I think there were two that have been what I would call injury prone, but the others, you know, he was playing, I don't know, 12 plus games in those other seasons. And, you know, when he is right, certainly he's one of the most impactful wide receivers in the game and would be a great complement to Garrett.
He is one of, I don't have the number in front of me and I should, he is one of the active leaders, if not one, he's two or three, in active leaders in yards per catch for his career.
Yep.
That's a legitimate stat. That pushes the ball downfield, and Aaron Rodgers has no problem doing that.
What's the latest on Hassan Reddick, the holdout and all of that? Do you expect him to be showing up and playing for the Jets in week one? Do you expect it to go beyond that? What's going on?
I don't think he'll, I mean, look, you might have had me on or somebody had me on like right before training camp, and I was like, oh, I just saw him recently wearing a Jets shirt at a camp I went to. So the people I talked to thought like, oh, good, he'll be there, and then he didn't show up. So I find it very hard to get into Hassan Reddick's head right now. Obviously, tomorrow's the key day, right? Like, if he's going to play in week one, he needs to be there for the start of game week. So tomorrow's the key day as to whether he shows up. I wouldn't bet on it. I'm not a betting man, but I wouldn't bet on it. I would bet he's willing to take it a little further. It seems like Trent Williams from the 49ers is willing to take it a little further. But tomorrow's really the day. If he doesn't show up tomorrow, then I don't know when the end is to this in sight. And I think it was maybe Adam Schefter over at ESPN who said they haven't even had talks in a while. And for somebody, for this to get done, they're going to have to meet in the middle. Neither side's going to completely give in. And if you're not even talking, I don't know how you can meet in the middle.
So Jets, obviously, longest playoff drought in the league. Haven't been to the playoffs in 13 years. I think you and I both think that that will end. But what would be a successful season as you look ahead for the Jets? Is it simply making the playoffs and ending the playoff drought, or they have 40-year-old Aaron Rodgers? Is the expectation more than that?
Yeah, I think the bare minimum to qualify as success is making the playoffs. But I think even if they make the playoffs and go one and out, you're going to, as a Jets fan, you're going to leave with a bad taste in your mouth as inside the Jets, especially if they have a home game, if they win the division, like I think they will, you're going to have a bad taste if you go one and done. If we waited 13 years for this, I think I would define right now without seeing, you know, what their roster is going to look like at that point or what their opponent's going to look like at that point. Like if they somehow are playing the Ravens, well, that's a toss up. But like they get a home game against like the Jaguars in the playoffs, I think you got to win a playoff game for the Jets to be constituted a successful season.
All right. The over on the Jets, the under on the Giants. Ryan Dunleavy from the New York Post. Always appreciate the time. Great stuff. We'll catch up with you soon.
Thanks for having me, Lori.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.